I don't know why. I just thought we needed some surf music today. I'm not even in the mood. In fact, I'm cold. Surfers never admit being cold, but it's a cold day. And I ask you on this day, a chilly day that it may be, to consider this. Let's say you're the new guy on the block, in the school, at the job, whatever. It matters not. Being the new guy carries with it some advantages, but it also carries some inconvenience as well. For instance, it takes a new guy about 40% longer to do simple tasks than his acclimated coworkers because the new guy can't remember his password on the computer, can't collect his messages because he does not know how to operate his phone yet, which was locked by the previous employee, and no one can unleash the 16-character code that has to be reset by the corporate tech guy who lives on a deserted dairy farm in Costa Rica. He works only half days on Saturdays and Tuesdays, and he does not believe, mind you, in email. So there's some delay in getting things set up when you're the new guy. Okay, you say, until then I can wing it with my cell phone, but the Wi-Fi's out. And the business office, which lots of your W-2, is negotiating with a new provider, but not until they move to that new headquarters in the converted Des Moines Army bunker, so there's another delay. And also, your agreed-upon salary that you had to work so hard to negotiate is in abeyance while the corporate drones kick back the agreement because you didn't initial next to all the holidays. What are you going to do for Columbus Day? Are you declaring it the Native American Soul Train Marathon? And who knew Don Cornelius was a member of a tribe? All new employees suffer through the embarrassment of not remembering your boss's name, or that of your coworker, or the guy who shares your locker, or worst of all, where's the bathroom? Is it this way? No, it's that way. You're kidding. It's on the 15th floor? No, I'm not with IT. I'm the new guy. So tell me quickly, where is the little boy's room? Today, our very special guest is the new guy. Not to life, oh no, but to his latest challenge in that life. We're going to talk with Chelan County Commissioner Bob Boogert. Let's welcome him to the show right now. Bob, welcome back to KPQ. Last time we saw each other, you were only a candidate, and
that's
now,
right.
Now
that's
you're
right.
Official.
Yeah, it's official. So thank you, Michael, for having me. It's a great honor.
Well, thanks for being the commissioner that showed up.
You bet. Yeah.
We talked to you the other day along with Kevin Overbay and Doug Ing. Well, Doug wasn't on the phone, but he was present with his spirit at any rate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting that three guys run the county commission.
Yes.
Two of them now are old hands at the job. And you're
the newbie.
And
yes.
Does the new guy bring fresh blood? Does he ask the right questions? Does he mix things up in the way an old guy wouldn't?
Well, you know, I think I'm mixing things up, and I'm sure asking a lot of questions, that's for sure. But a lot of them, I really got a kick out of what you're saying there, because a lot of it are simple, basic, mundane questions that I have right now. And I really have to thank Kevin and Doug for all their support and helping me get going. And a lot of the department heads, and certainly Kathy Mulhall, our county administrator, and all the staff there to help me get up to speed as quickly as I can. And, you know, it's every night I take something home with me as a little bit of homework to read up on so that I'm a little bit further along with each day.
Because the job responsibility is rather broad, isn't it?
It is. It's quite broad, yeah. And it is. It's, you know, that's what really makes it fun. That's what makes it rewarding. That's what makes it a little bit daunting, because there are some very big responsibilities that I, as one of the three commissioners, must fulfill. And so it is something you don't take lightly, that's for sure. And there's a lot of things related to public health, public safety, that really need to be addressed, and certainly to be just a good fiscal manager. That is such a key thing for the three commissioners.
When someone has a new job or a new responsibility or goes to a new school, there's always that level of nervousness. You know, you always have the butterflies, or I do.
Yes.
don't know if you do.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Is that how you feel about this new job?
You're on your toes? Initially, I did. You know, starting in December, before I actually got sworn in, Michael, that I spent a lot of time, as much as time as I could there, to learn to get up to speed so that by the time I did get sworn in, at least I have a little bit of a footing. And I really have to thank a lot of the department heads for actually spending a fair amount of time to kind of school me, bring me up to speed on some of the very detailed issues that they've got facing them right now. And that really helped me. You know, there was, Michael, I've been working with county commissioners for virtually all my career, so I always had that outside looking in. And now that I am in there and I'm in the seat, there are really no surprises that came to me as far as, you know, oh, this is an issue or that's an issue. So that part was good for me. But certainly the level of detail, I really need to spend a lot of time getting up to speed on so many issues, from solid waste to transportation to homelessness, everything like that. That it's been really kind of mind expanding for me, and it's very gratifying.
Have you had to make any big decisions yet?
No big decisions yet. But we had one decision that we made just a short while ago that was quite straightforward, quite easy, and it was actually quite gratifying, was the fact that we have some what's called the 0.9% sales tax receipt to the county there, where we are to make investments into projects and programs that provide economic benefit to our community and create jobs. And one of the things that we did provide funding to was the city of Wenatchee, as you probably know, Michael, for the development and the completion of the work on Methow Kiwanis Park that has been underway for quite some time now. Just a tremendous public-private partnership.
A lot of people working on it.
And so many of the direct and indirect benefits from that particular park renovation there, and such a key part of our community. And so we were honored and delighted to be able to allocate some of the funds for that program to the tune of about $250,000. The city of Wenatchee, like all applicants, had to fill out a fairly detailed form, making sure that we did meet the criteria as specified by the county and the state for the use of those funds. And it was a very compelling argument. And the great thing about it was that it truly had very strong support and sweat equity and labor by the community around that area that really put in a lot of work to make that a reality.
And there's something magic about parks. In any of the great cities of the world,
yes,
they have a big park.
They do.
They're very proud of it. It may be one of the leading features of their town. If you look at New York from above, you go, what's that in the middle?
Yes.
Well, that's Central Park. Well, let's go there. I mean, all the other buildings and all the other streets look the same.
Yes.
It's a repetition of certain things. But a park is a unique piece of a city that is separate and apart.
It's separate, yeah. And it's such an important element to the community, bringing people together for that sense of community. And, you know, that park in particular, Methow Park, was in serious need of some renovation there. It had been a little bit neglected, and so now the city, I really have to commend the city and the Trust for Public Land, who was instrumental in that process, to do a very detailed community engagement. What do we want this park to be? How do we make this happen? And they did it. And so we were honored, we in the county here, were honored to be able to support them in the way that we could.
One of the elements that we talked about on the phone with you and Commissioners England and Overbay the other day was about the South Wenatchee being an enterprise zone, an opportunity zone.
Yes.
What does that amount to? I had never heard that phrase before, and I'm sure other people have used it regularly, but I hadn't heard it.
Yeah, well, Kevin Overbay, I really have to commend him for his work through the Our Valley, Our Future process there, to really be looking at ways that we can really create opportunities, business opportunities that spin off to other entrepreneurial ventures in the South Wenatchee area, and to be able to work with the community in South Wenatchee and the city to make that happen. And so there's lots of opportunities there that can provide incentives for some entrepreneurial activity down there.
Seems to be a lot of room for growth,
Lots.
If anyone with an imagination who came to town saying, well, I'm going to relocate my operation here, now where should I go? Well, you look around town, you see everybody's going to Old Station, or everyone's going to that end of town.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to the other end of town if I needed room and wanted to make a name for myself.
Yeah, like, I think you're right. And actually, taking it even further south down to Malaga, I think there's lots of opportunities down there too. And so I think we've got the right chemistry going on within our county to really support some of these efforts here. So it's very gratifying stuff, Michael.
Remember back to your campaign when you were making promises to us, but also promises to yourself. This is what I think I can do. This is what I know I'm capable of.
Uh-huh.
What do you think of those campaign promises now that you've sat in a chair for a while? And how would you give life to them when the opportunity arises?
Yeah. Well, that's a really good question, Michael. You know, the big thing that I talked about a lot when I was out chatting with people in the community was a community wildfire protection. And that still is an important issue to me, because I think that something we need to really address, because it not only does it affect our public safety, but it also affects our economy and just their quality of life here. And so it is a tough nut to crack.
Boy, is it.
It really involves a lot of work with our federal government. You know, the fact that we are 85% of our county, plus or minus some, is publicly owned, and primarily with the United States Forest Service, but also with the Department of Natural Resources to work with the state in that. And then certainly we've got a lot of work that we need to do as far as the wildland urban interface, to make sure that we have safe communities. How do we be proactive about this?
It's good luck.
Good luck. That's right. It's a challenge.
Well, think of what happened last summer.
Mm-hmm.
The fire that burned for the longest was above Chelan.
Yes.
And people were calling in and saying, well, you mismanaged the forest. What did you expect to happen? And I would have to point out, these are not forest lands. This mm-hmm. is brush and chaparral and high, and it's not even at the tree line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you got to put it out because, well, wait, there's winds blowing, there's fire burning in different areas, it's spreading by virtue of Mother Nature pushing it ahead of itself.
Yeah.
And we had 30,000 people fighting that fire from time to time. What more can you do for a fire that was stubbornly staying behind and ruining our summer for some people?
Yeah, that's our challenge. You know, we spent many decades in a fire suppression mode, Michael, and to the point where we've got some unhealthy forests here that got a tremendous amount of burnable material. And, you know, fire is, you know, science is telling us more and more is that it is a regularly occurring feature within this dry forest of the east slope of the Cascades. And, we suppressed them over many years. And now, we need to figure out how to get ourselves into a situation where we do have controlled burns, prescribed burns, if you will, and to be able to manage the smoke in a much more controlled way instead of having these megafires, these catastrophic wildfires. And it's not an easy situation. You know, it took decades for us to get into the situation, and, you know, the science behind forest management is ever-evolving. And, you know, I think we are fortunate that we've got some great forest scientists right here within our community that are being able to provide some really good, compelling data about how to do that. But it's, you know, smoke management is something that is very difficult to work around. And it is clearly when we have those long, protracted, very smoky days that it is bad for our health. It's bad for our economy. And we need to figure out how to do it in a way that we have smoke light, if you will, as opposed to these long, difficult days in the summertime.
Of course, you'd like the breezes to come up to blow the smoke away, but that also encourages the fire, and you end up with more smoke.
Yes. It's a difficult nut to crack. There's no doubt about that.
And also, there's no season for it. I mean, we can probably examine today's weather as saying it's not conducive to a fire above Chelan, but at the same time, if one got going, there's really nothing up there to stop it except the snow.
Yeah. And there are some state and federal laws and mandates that at times can be conflicting
as
far as smoke management and air quality standards that we need to work our way around. So it's something that I think the county can be a facilitator, a leader, a cheerleader, if you will.
And a squeaky wheel asking for help.
And a squeaky wheel, that's a great term. Yeah, a glorified nag, if you will, about how to get this thing done so that, you know, Lake Chelan doesn't have a smoke-filled August. And, you know, not only is it bad for our health, but it's bad for our economy.
Very bad.
And so we need to really spend a lot of time working on that and just increase our resilience, if you will, to some of these wildfires. And that is a personal goal that I had before. I have a feeling that, Michael, as I get further and further into my work as a commissioner, that I think there'll be other things that will speak to me quite a bit that I hadn't been thinking about beforehand. And, perhaps we can chat about that a little bit as well.
That's Bob Buttert. He's our county commissioner. We'll be back to talk with him. He's the newest of the three. He's the rookie on the job, and he's learning as he goes. And we enjoy talking with him. Be back in a moment on News Radio 560 KPQ.
You're listening here on News Radio 560 KPT. The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
Our time is 12:34. This is News Radio 560 KPQ. My very special guest is Bob Boogert. He's a county commissioner now for the great county of Chelan, and he's our guest. The first time he's visited us since taking office. Taking office, by the way, was not a straightforward thing, was it? You were in a runoff, and
kind of up and down and up and down. Yes,
I'm sure someone said, you know, it could be a tight race, but who knew it was going to be that tight? How many votes separated you?
Oh, I don't know what the final count was, Michael. Somewhere 500 plus or minus, somewhere right around there. Yeah. So you know, it just goes to show what they always say is that
what
every
they always
vote
say
counts.
And what we never believe.
Yep, every vote counts.
Every vote does count.
Yeah, particularly for these local offices here. Yeah, but you know, as we're talking while we're off the air there, how great it was that our community just had such a high participation rate. What'd you say, 70%?
About 70%, really, yeah. Remarkable, I thought.
Yeah, that is. You know, that's really a testament to our community.
Because the national average is below 50% in virtually every place, which is an embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
And for the fact that half the people decide what all the people are going to deal with in terms of their governance.
Yes. Yes.
If I forced it upon you, you'd say, well, that's unfair revolution.
Yes, yes.
But when we accept it to ourselves with no pain and suffering involved with it whatsoever, we go, voting. Well, yeah. Who cares?
Yeah. I can't remember who was it that said, some famous public servant said that democracy is not a spectator sport.
No way.
It's a contact sport.
In fact, you had to live with some of that contact. You didn't have a particularly strident campaign, but you never know when they're going to pop up.
Yeah, but it was good. And, you know, there were four others besides myself, you know, and it was Sean Smith and, the other three that were in, but it was to the best that we could make it a very positive experience for each other. And people were definitely engaged, so it was good. Prompted good dialogue.
Did your life change dramatically when you were sworn in terms of what you do every day now?
Well, certainly I get up very early and get the ground running here, and which is fine with me. I'm very enthusiastic and energized by the whole deal. Every day is a learning experience, without a doubt. Yeah, so it's been quite rewarding.
Can you tell me something about what you're calling the Icicle Work Group? What does that amount to, Bob?
Yeah, so that is something that our Natural Resources Department, under the leadership, very capable leadership of the Director, Mike Caputa, has been facilitating a process for the Icicle Creek. And it is a consortium of quite a diverse set of interests from the Icicle Pashasin Irrigation District to the Department of Ecology, Department of Fish and Wildlife, to Trout Unlimited, to National Marine Fisheries Service, the Leavenworth Fish Hatchery, Cascade Orchard Irrigation Company, City of Leavenworth, and the list goes on and on and on.
And all the fish in the river.
And yes.
Or the creek.
Yes, yeah. And put it all together to improve the water management and fish habitat and the irrigation delivery for that system, a very important component of the district that I am to serve in, which is District 2, the Icicle Creek off the Wenatchee River there. And it was 6 years in the making, Michael, and very difficult, protracted discussions, and folks with very diverse interests, needs, and mandates coming together to try to forge a compromise solution to meet the needs of everyone.
Because everyone is using that area.
Everyone is using that water, which is a key resource. Everyone is dependent upon that system.
It's nice to have water if you need it for your work or whatever the case may be. But when you use water, you change it in a certain way.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
That's where we have to be careful.
Yeah, and it is such a precious commodity that we cannot take for granted. And so this group did a really great job of putting together over, like I said, a six-year period to come up with a compromise solution that provides greater reliability for the orchardists within the Icicle Pashasin Irrigation District and for the City of Leavenworth and the Cascade Orchard Irrigation Company, as well as some very necessary improvements to the Leavenworth National Fish Hatchery both its water supply and its fish cultural capabilities. Some fish passage improvements and in-stream flow improvements for the salmon and steelhead within the icicle drainage. Some higher level of assurance to the Yakima Nation as far as their treaty fishing rights, meeting all these different needs. And, you know, it has to be done under the constraints and the mandates of the Endangered Species Act and the Wilderness Act.
That's a lot of players.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's hard, difficult stuff, really challenging. And it tests one's patience in putting together a compromise solution. Like
sounds like everyone on that list, and that's a long list.
It's a big list.
Had to compromise.
They did. They did.
And they managed it?
And they pulled it off. Yeah.
There's hope.
Yeah. So
there's hope for the future.
It is. And so they're at the stage now, Michael, where they have released their final environmental impact statement. And so I truly commend them for putting that together.
What do you expect the final words to be on this?
Well, so the next stage then is, you know, they've got the draft plan in place now, and each of those individual elements need to be figured out and put into place. And so the implementation phase is now before them, and they do have a very committed group that has been focused on this for quite some time now, and now the trick is to come up with funding and having a plan that has got this broad-based support by this diverse group of interests, I think will be a very compelling statement to the funding organizations, be it the PUDs, the Office of the Columbia River through the Washington State, through the Salmon Recovery Funding Board, through the federal government. There's different sources of funding out there to be able to do it. And it's no small price tag, believe me.
I believe you. Yeah. What would the end result look like?
The end result will be a much better management of the water within the icicle creek in the basin and its uses, and hopefully some conservation measures that will be meaningful, some in-stream flows that will be beneficial for salmon and steelhead, some passage improvements that have been discussed for many years, 30 years plus. And so, and then the increased capability of a resource there, the Leavenworth National Fish Hatchery, that will be much needed and really allow them to provide for harvest, both sport harvest and to fulfill their treaty fishing obligations for the treaty tribes.
Now, if you and your helpers and all the co-signers to this plan, there's a lot of people involved,
yeah,
had done nothing, what would the result have been?
Litigation.
Just litigation, but what about the use,
yeah,
of the land?
Well, there'd be just probably a standstill for a lot of these things, and some things that were needed over a very long time period, they just would not have gotten done. Yeah, so this is, so many of these, the funding entities really, before they provide, you know, funding, significant amounts of money, they want to make sure that this has got community support. This has got support from the, all the key players. And, you know, just to have something where it's got both the Colville tribe and the Yakima Nation involved in support of that carries a lot of weight. And so it's, I think it is something that I really commend that group for putting together. So they will, the implementation, I don't know how long it's going to play out, but it'll be over a very long time frame. But this is a major step. And I think there will be some near-term actions that they can get to help them build some momentum. And but I think I'm sure you'll be seeing some things happening here that playing out here over the next couple of years here that will be truly a benefit to the Upper Valley there, to the folks that live in and around Leavenworth area and the growers in that area.
And no matter what, whether you're a sportsman or a farmer,
yeah,
you have to be aware of how delicate that balance is.
When it
gets out of balance,
yes,
it's almost impossible to put back.
That's right. That's right. And the only way this can happen is that each player compromises a little bit to put things together for the good of the whole. And so that's how you get things done.
And the remarkable thing is it worked.
Yeah, it works. Yeah. And it's not dissimilar, you know, Michael, from what the county has done up in the Stamilk Basin to foster dialogue and coordinated efforts to address some really difficult issues of water management, recreation, and wildlife habitat up in the Stamilk. You know, they put together the Stamilk Partnership. Oh, good Lord, and that thing's been up and running for 12 years now, something like that. Could be even longer than that, Michael. But they, it's got that broad consortium of everybody working together for a common good and have a good decision-making process at the local community level so that the heavy hand of state or federal government doesn't have to come in because they are managing. They are being good stewards of the land and at the local grassroots level. And it's really great to see that kind of commitment by the growers and the Wenatchee sportsmen and the recreationalists and all the players up in the Stamilk Basin to put things together. And then, you know, by having those plans put together, Michael, that, again, I can't stress this enough, that that really opens the door for funding for implementation. So, you know, a lot of the work that they are doing now to manage their forests up there, to manage their elk habitat, to increase their reliability of their irrigation supply, all is because they've got a plan that they support each other for this, and then that just spurs investment by funders into the area. So it's a great model to be used elsewhere in the county, and that just really excites me.
Now let me change the subject ever so slightly to stop talking about fish and all the wonderful wonderful accomplishments you've made there in the Icicle Work Group, and talk about something a little more rudimentary. Jail. We can't. No. You and I are walking around free, but there are some people in jail today.
Yes.
In our jail.
Yes.
Can you describe what that jail's like?
Yeah, you know, that has been a really good thing for me, Michael, to learn more about our regional justice center, our jail. I was aware that there were some funding needs there prior to me being elected, and but it really wasn't until I stepped into the plate that the jail director, interim jail director Bill Larson, and his staff were good enough to walk me through a lot of the issues at the jail. Actually, give me quite a lengthy, extensive tour of the facilities, and to really get a better understanding of our needs there. And, you know, this is a major component of the county's budget. And, you know, you tie that in with another fellow that has been very good as far as briefing, get me up to speed, whom I have tremendous respect for, and that's Sheriff Brian Burnett.
Oh, he was just here this week.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he and his staff, you know, that really tip my hat to them and to the jail staff, that it's really a big part of what county government does. You know, and I can't stress enough, you know, to compare our county with all the other counties in the state, we've got very good public safety record here, and it's because of them. And, you know, I've had lots of opportunities, Michael, to interface through what's called the Washington State Association of Counties to get to know how other counties operate, what their issues are, what our common goals are. And we do have a very good public safety program here.
You want that jail changed in any way?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up. So here's the thing, is that our jail was built, I think, in 1984. And it shows. And it's, you know, it there's a lot of things that, as far as safety to the employees, safety to the inmates, and just overall management of that facility, it's difficult given the structure that we've got there now.
How many people can it, how many
oh, you would
should it hold?
Or
how many,
that.
Well, that's all right. If you don't know,
I was
is it overcrowded or is it understaffed?
It is overcrowded and understaffed. There's
bad
a lot
combination.
Yeah, and there's a lot of the staff that are putting in a fair amount of overtime, and you know, which increases stress. It's not good for our budget. We need to figure out a way to do that.
Is it a safe facility?
It, in some respects, there are some safety issues because of they don't have good monitoring equipment, and there are a lot of areas that had to be modified in there to allow for some isolation some of the inmates. You know, and it in some respects, it is a de facto holding place for some mentally ill inmates.
Always.
And, yeah, so that's it really creates a challenge for their staff. And but, you know, I was truly impressed with the professionalism and the positive attitude of the staff there as far as handling what seemed to me to be a very difficult situation. I've got a lot to learn, I have to admit. Right off the bat, this is something that I need to do more homework on. They put together a very compelling business plan for how to get the jail so they're up a little bit better to standards. And a lot of it, right off the bat, Michael, is some organizational issues that they're hoping to address. And it's how we're going to finance that, I don't know. We need to figure that out and do some serious homework and head-scratching. But there are some immediate organizational changes that Director Larson has done to streamline and to have better accountability and support to the staff there.
But one way or another, there's changes coming.
I would assume so, somewhere down the line. We need to have much further discussions about that, and it's a multi-year business plan that they put together, and so we'll be digging into that year by year, each year, what we can pull off within our budget, and that's always the challenge. Right.
Cheyenne County Commissioner Bob Boogert is our guest. We'll be back to say goodbye, and a few more words before we have to say adios for the day. We'll be back after these words. It's 12:50 now on News Radio 560 KPQ.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.